This is episode 37 of the Fifth Estate Podcast, Kyle Foley and the World of Gaming. Protect your home the smart way. Without the expensive long-term contracts using SimpliSafe Home Security, visit simplisafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. So in early January, they had the big consumer electronics show in Las Vegas, and that show wrapped up, and our sponsor, SimpliSafe Home Security, was there, and they had one of the most talked about products on the show. It's a new SimpliSafe security camera. It connects to the sensors in your alarm system. So if an intruder tries to break in, the camera will automatically start recording. Then not only will SimpliSafe call the police, but you'll have actual evidence. So when the police arrive, you can say, here's the guy. It's really incredible stuff. Plus, with SimpliSafe, there are never any expensive long-term contracts. It's great. You can check it out. You can check it out at your home anytime. Just live stream HD footage directly into your smartphone. Pretty wild, huh? So if you want to see for yourself what SimpliSafe's brilliant technology can do for you, your home, visit simplisafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. You'll even get our special 10% discount. That's only at simplisafe.com/ricochet. All right, it is time for another episode of The Fifth Estate. My name is Jay Caruso. I am here with my co-host, Mr. Neil Doing. How are you, sir?
Jay, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing especially well. You know, it's getting closer to the end of winter. Looking forward
to
spring.
Yes, we're in the home stretch there.
Yep.
It's going to be, March 21st, first day of spring.
Yep.
So we're coming up on a month away.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, spring is already here because pitchers and catchers have reported. And that is a beautiful thing for baseball fans.
Yes, sports are enjoyed by many.
But not necessarily by Neil. Hey, everyone, before we bring our guest in, as always, we tell you every week, we love that you listen to this podcast, but we want you to subscribe. And one of the things we really like for you to do, and this helps us out. It really does. It's not just to feed our egos. I mean, that's part of it. But when you go and you go to iTunes and you open that up and you leave a review or even just a star rating, that kind of keeps us, you know, at the top of the game and more people get to hear us. And Neil likes it.
I do. You know, it keeps us in the mix. It keeps us, you know, relevant, timely. It helps other people find the show as well. So if you like what we're doing, then, tell other people about it, folks. We really do enjoy it so much.
Yes, we do. So,
you know, another.
Yeah.
What now?
No, nope, you're in.
I'm in. You know,
you're up.
Another thing. You know, another thing we enjoy, Jay, or we have enjoyed in the past, is electronic entertainment in the form of video games.
Yeah, I still play video games.
You still play video games?
Yep.
Still play video games. My video gaming has fallen off quite a bit in the last 2 years or so. It's like I turned 30 and all of a sudden I just wanted to read books and go to bed at 9 o'clock. And so, you know,
when you turn 40, it'll happen. You'll pick it back up again. You'll be like, you know, that was actually kind of fun. Maybe I should try it again.
Well, there is a light at the end of the tunnel there. Well, that's excellent. Well, let's bring in our guest who's here to talk to us about video games and give us the latest news in the world of video gaming. And that is Mr. Kyle Foley, who is a contributor at Heat Street. Kyle, how are you?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for being here.
So so Kyle, we wanted to bring you in because you sort of cover this as your beat. You've written about it for Heat Street, and you also are branching out, and you have a YouTube channel and a podcast that you do that's related to video games. So we definitely wanted to bring you in because we figured you would know more about it than we do. But I think it would be good if, seeing as Jay still plays and I until recently just played, maybe we should talk about kind of like our favorite games just to start it off on a fun note.
All right. That works.
Yeah. So, so Kyle, what are you playing these days?
Oh, what am I playing these days? So I play, for the most part, I play pretty much everything that comes out, at least on the AAA side, so the big publisher stuff. But I've been playing a lot of this new game that just came out recently called For Honor, which is a great medieval-type game. You've got knights versus Vikings versus samurai. It's kind of your classic three sides all fighting each other. It's a lot of fun. But I've been sticking to – I stick mostly to first-person shooter games for the most part, because that's what the kids do these days. Overwatch is a huge game that's now been out for almost a year. It's probably been one of the most successful games in recent memory. I play a lot of that, which is a ton of fun. But yeah, there's really, that's kind of my go-to. I go back to that, but I just sit around and play, for the most part, everything that comes out just to kind of give it a look at least.
That sounds exhausting. Jay, what do you play, man?
Currently, I'm not a big time gamer, so it's like there's a few genres I like. I am a huge fan of the Call of Duty first person shooters. I like some sports games. It's a shame. Baseball is my favorite sport, and there hasn't been a good baseball game made in quite some time, which is really kind of football is always good, Madden's good. Lately, I've been playing a lot of NHL. 16. I haven't gotten 17 yet, but it's fun because there's like a superstar kind of career mode where you play as one player.
And, oh yeah, yeah.
You know, so basically when you're sitting on the bench, the action is going on around you. You're not actually playing. So if you get into a fight in a hockey match and you're in the penalty box for 5 minutes, it gives you time to actually get up, go get something to drink, go to the bathroom, do whatever, and the game continues. So that's actually kind of fun. But yeah, It's Call of Duty games have always been my favorite, the first person shooter ones. Battlefield is pretty good as well. It kind of took a strange turn. It was very military, and then all of a sudden it was kind of like a cop one from the next time that they put it out, which is a little strange, but it's been a good series. My son has the latest Battlefield, which he says is really good. So yeah, that's me. I'm not a hardcore gamer. I don't do online gaming. Yeah. In fact, I was just talking to my son today. I was saying, it's like I wish there'd be more games that are suitable to single player campaigns rather than, because now you see games, and Kyle, let me ask you about this. We can talk about it. Is gaming has become this thing where it's like a lot of the new games, at least from my experience, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that it seems like there's so many games that are created where they say, oh, well, single player mode is okay, but the campaign is kind of short. It's online where you really get the, full experience. And, it's kind of a bummer because, it's like if you don't have time to sit there and play for hours online, you're looking for something different. Is that still the case, or is that changing, or what, or am I just wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. People are starting to realize that gamers are buying things for the online. I'll go back to Overwatch as an example. There is no single player in Overwatch. It's a strictly online multiplayer game. Now, you can play offline against training bots and do the tutorial, but the game itself, you can't actually do anything on your own. You have to be online and playing. So I think because that's been so successful, we're going to see in the next year or so going forward, games starting to focus more on, hey, maybe if we make an incredible multiplayer experience, then we don't need to sell a single player game mode. And so many people have bought Overwatch, and it's become such a big thing in less than a year that it's very possible that this could be the direction places go. And I think some big games are, but I do think, again, for the most part, most games are going to still include some form of single player. For Honor, for example, the game that I've been playing lately has an excellent campaign mode, and it's also got a really good multiplayer as well. But campaign, they put a lot of focus into the storytelling, the voice acting. There's a lot of games like that where Overwatch seems right now to be the exception to the rule. But it could be in the future games could be more like that, but I definitely think other people are going to try. I just don't know how successful it's going to be.
Well, I mean, it's totally possible to have a really immersive and fun single-player campaign, like the Mass Effect series. I played that. And that was great. I mean, that was an amazing story that you were sort of told. So what else is coming out recently? What else is big in gaming? What's the recent news in terms of like new releases?
Well, we just had at the same time on February 14th, we had For Honor come out, as well as Sniper Elite 4, which is a game where you're going around sniping Nazis, which with the political climate right now, there's been a lot of think pieces about. Not that there really needed to be any, but that's kind of been the big talk. But really, everyone's just gearing up for March 3rd, which is the launch of the new Nintendo console, which, after getting my hands on it last month, I can firmly say is going to be possibly one of the greatest consoles that has ever existed, and well worth the money. But that's what everyone's getting really hyped for right now, is new Legend of Zelda games, new Mario games, just new Nintendo that's not quirky mm-hmm. and weird, like the Wii and the Wii U were, where those were very niche things where it's like, hey, here you have this little random stick that you're going to move around and do stuff with, or here's a really clunky, low-quality tablet you can use. This is a premium console with some premium games coming out to it. That's kind of what everyone's gearing for.
And it has the strength of Nintendo's catalog of characters, which, you know, those Mario and Link and Zelda and all those guys, they'll sell millions of copies no matter what format they're in, I think.
And that's the only reason Nintendo stayed around recently. I genuinely believe it's the reason Sega isn't really a thing anymore, because the branding of Sonic, which is really their main character, isn't nearly as strong as the branding and the nostalgia factor of the Nintendo characters. Because Nintendo, they run their business horribly. They just recently, last year, released a Nintendo Entertainment System Mini, and they only made 1.5 million, I believe is the number, 1.5 million versions of it to sell around the world, and everybody wanted one. And so what you would do, and I did this, I took advantage of it, I bought three for $50 each, because I was able to get my hands on them off of Amazon Prime Now, and then I sold two of them for $120 each. So I made $140 off of that, and I had one for myself. So,
so what you're telling me is that you made a child cry on Christmas.
Oh, I didn't make the child cry. I made the parents' wallet cry.
Yeah.
But no, it's Nintendo's just the last. I mean, the 3DS has been their most successful thing in recent memory, way more successful than the Wii and the Wii U. And that's such a clunky, awkward handheld console. The only reason that still exists is because you have games like Pokemon. Putting out Zelda games, they're putting out Mario games, they're putting out things where people are buying it specifically for these characters. I know people who only bought the Wii U because there was a new Super Smash Bros. Game, and that franchise has been around for such a long time, and it's such a staple that they bought it. But the thing with the Switch that it's doing that nobody there, that Nintendo hasn't done in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, is they're actually bringing out other developers, bringing other games, like Call of Duty is going to be available at some point. It hasn't been announced, but it's that's going to be available. Skyrim is going to be available, I believe, in either March or April for the Nintendo Switch. So they're taking all these games that you normally wouldn't see on a Nintendo console and putting them on there in hopes of getting people to buy it, but that also required them to obviously make the console able to support it. But this is Nintendo finally making a good decision, it seems, but everyone's just kind of skeptical because we have 3 weeks until it comes out, 3 weeks until it comes out, and we don't know everything about how it's going to work. But right now, that's while all these few other things happen in between now and then, that's what everyone's really paying close attention to.
So, Kyle, I mean, why is it important to cover games and gaming? I mean, some people would dismiss this as sort of a, you know, an irrelevant subject, but why would you say it's important to cover these trends?
I think there's a couple different reasons, but I think one of the biggest things is just it's nice to have some sort of an escape from things. We go back to the political climate that's going on now. I mean, there's nothing that people are looking at right now, even no matter how. I mean, I guess if you're very supportive of Donald Trump, perhaps you're extremely happy. But for the most part, people are looking at things saying, well, you know, even when things do kind of go well for me, they're not really good. And video games are kind of this thing right now where people are just turning to it as an escape. I've done that for the last year, and that's why I've begun doing more and more with it, because it's just don't have all the same type of drama and hostility in there. Now, some of that does exist in all corners, but it's important to really hold on to culture, and that can be many different forms for a lot of different people. For some people, it's film and television. For some people, it's art, actual art. And for some people, it's video games. And a lot of people, it's video games. something like 65% of households in the United States have a device that is used to play video games. So when that many people are doing it, it's absolutely important to cover it and to have stuff out there about it in lots of different forms, not just news, but more thoughtful pieces about it, more, you know, some long-form journalism that talks about gaming, because those things are important to us. I think if it's just like if it was any other major form of our culture, I think it could be very dangerous. So I think it's absolutely important to cover so that we're, you know, so we still have something to hold on to. And for a lot of people, it's just, you know, I grew up as a kid playing games, and so I like to have that bit of my childhood to hold on to. I mean, there's different reasons for different people why they game, but it's such a huge thing. It's absolutely important to cover. And from a business perspective, of course, if so many people are doing it, covering it is a good way to make money and have a successful business.
Oh, sure. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Yeah. And that's all shifting to YouTube and Twitch and those kind of things. And there are people on there who make six figures, and all they do is put out a five-minute video every day. And if people understand, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, but then they see the kind of money these people make, and it's just like, this is absolutely ridiculous. This field is booming right now. And it's eventually that's going to stop, and eventually things are going to flatline there. But for now, it's kind of it's a crazy, very volatile industry right now. Paying attention to it is pretty important. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, who's that? Who's that top the wealthiest YouTuber guy? What's his name? You probably know his name.
Yeah, PewDiePie.
There you go. See, I knew it. And he basically got that from doing nothing but playing video games on a YouTube channel.
Played video games every day, and he's got something like 50 million subscribers on YouTube.
And he makes like eight, you know, with not just, it's obviously more than just ad money, which is nothing, but, you know, sponsorships and everything else, makes like millions of dollars a year. It's insane.
Yep.
And unless you're like in the know of people who are on YouTube, you probably never heard of the guy. I never heard of him until I saw something where they were talking about the people that make the most money on YouTube. And you know, it's funny, you know, my son and my daughter both knew who he was, but I was like, I have no idea who this guy is.
I knew who he was.
Well, good for you.
I mean, I knew who he was before this week when he got in trouble for a prank that went horribly wrong.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. So, Kyle, let me ask you about this, because one of the things in gaming is, you know, the console gamers versus the PC gamers, and some people do both, and others prefer one. I, to myself, since I'm not a hardcore gamer, I prefer the console because it's a lot easier. It's just this box, and you just plug it in, and you pop a game in there, or you download a game, you're done, and that's it. You know, building a gaming PC, my son Michael has one. He's got it decked out with, you know, this ridiculous video card, and he's got the liquid cooling system, and you know, he's got the LED lights and all this other kind of stuff. I mean, it's pretty wild. And he built it himself, which obviously, and you'll probably agree, saves money if you build it on your own instead of getting a pre-built one. But what is the, like, what do you prefer? And then what do you, again, in the future, what do you see kind of winning out of it? Or is it just going to, it'll stay the same with the PC people on their side and the console gamers on another? Or is one going to start dominating over the other?
I think console gaming is definitely, I don't know if it's going to overtake PC gaming, but it's getting to that point now where the graphics on a console game are starting to rival that of a PC game, which for years, the real issue with that fight was PC just always looked better.
Right.
I own an Xbox, a PlayStation, and I've poured way too much money than I would like to admit on my PC. And I game probably more often on my PlayStation than anything because it's easier to just sit back on the couch or whatever, or on my bed, and just grab a controller and play. And they've gotten to the point now where the new PlayStation 4 Pro, which I have, will run games in 4K, which is exactly what my computer will run them in. So there's really not too much of a difference. But I think and it's way cheaper. The PlayStation is $400, or you get it even cheaper for slightly less hardcore versions. But the reason why console gaming is such a big thing is just because it's so easy for anyone to do. Even to get a decent laptop that can run the newest games is going to run you around $1,000, and building a computer is going to cost you even more.
Right.
And so the fact that a console is only going to cost you $300, $400, and you're going to be able to play all these newest things, That's clearly where people are going to go. It's also easier to play with friends in the same room on a PlayStation or an Xbox. You can't really do that on a PC, at least not very easily. So it's PC, the way it's all I've always seen it is, console is more for the casual gamers, the I do this because it's fun and I just want to play the newest games and enjoy it. And then PC is the hardcore gamers.
Well, I think first off, confession. I lied earlier when I say I don't play video games. I am actually one of those people who uses a PC. But my strategy is, of course, to just play games that I wanted to play 6 years ago on a modern PC so that I can run the games that I couldn't run before. So, you know, yay, thrift. Anyway, especially because, you know, people like myself who are maybe non-traditional gamers or have phased out of gaming, what kind of people are playing games these days? I mean, there are a lot of people doing it, right? I mean, if you factor in mobile games too.
Well, if you're counting mobile games, it's almost everyone in the world plays a mobile game at some point. But I was actually looking up specifically when it comes to consoles and PC. I was just looking up some numbers because I didn't know. And the average game player age is 35 years old, which I would have never believed. And one of the largest demographics for video game players is 50 years and older. Which
really?
It is larger than ages 36 to 49 by about 10%. So it's sitting at 26% of gamers are 50 years or older. 27% are under 18 and 29 are between 18 and 35. So it's actually a really healthy mix of all these different ages playing video games, which is one of the things that I wouldn't have believed unless I had looked into it. Because to me, I just see people like me. I see 20, 21-year-olds, you know, high school and college kids hopping on and playing video games. That's just what I assume a gamer is. And then you start to realize, oh, there's actually so many other people play these types of things. It blew my mind how many people and what a wide variety of people play.
And it's not all men either. A sizable percentage of these people are women.
Yep.
Right?
It's about 60-40 male-female, which, again, higher than I had expected, because when I hop on a game or I'm playing Call of Duty and I'm in a voice chat lobby and you can hear everyone, very rarely do I ever hear a female playing. Now, granted, they might be playing other games and they might that game might not have a large amount of females playing, but the fact that it's a 60-40 split is kind of impressive to me.
Yeah, that is pretty impressive. I didn't think that it would be that big either. So that's pretty cool. So, all right. So, Let's jump ahead a little bit, and you know we're starting to see now these the virtual reality mask that you can get with your phone and things of that nature. And I'm assuming, and I don't know, you can kind of confirm this, that the big boys are kind of looking at this too as well for the future. That something that we have kind of like been talking about for like 20 years now could possibly become a reality here at some point. That you know, there'll be some really good, virtual reality type gaming products that will hit the market at some point, say in the next 5 to 10 years, that will finally make it worth buying. You know, they've tried this before, and
I remember it hasn't worked. I was young enough to catch the first wave of VR back in the 90s when, you know, you would have they had it at theme parks.
Right.
Wait in line for an hour or something, and you strap into this headset and in a booth, and you play the game. But it was never anything that you could put in your home.
Yeah, exactly. And so is that something that is going to be? Do you know much about that? And you know,
have you tried it, Kyle?
Tried it at all?
Yeah. So I've used there's a Galaxy VR thing, which you plug in a Samsung phone. I think it costs like $99. You can get it cheaper. The stuff you're doing there is obviously you're not playing brand new games on it. You're just playing some mobile specifically designed for VR stuff. But even that technology is more than anybody would have expected we'd be at 10 years ago. But they do have, there are a lot of things. PlayStation last year released their PlayStation VR, which will run you about $500 to $600. And it's right now too expensive to ever recommend buying to anyone unless you're a nut. I haven't even bought it, and I've considered it, but I've held back. There's a couple other ones. There's the Oculus. There's HTC has one. There's a bunch of those different things that are out there right now that'll run you. There, I mean, they're a lot of money. They're anywhere between $600 and $1,000. But you can play the latest games. I know Resident Evil 7, which just came out recently, has it set up so you can play through the whole game in VR, which I know a couple people who have done that. And it feels like you are inside the game. And of course, because game graphics have now gotten to the point where they feel so incredibly realistic, it seems like you are actually in that environment and you feel like you're absolutely a part of it. I think really the next goal for them over the next couple of years is just, let's lower the prices. Let's try to make it more accessible, because the problem is, and I think the reason why it hasn't gotten to that now is just people aren't buying it because it's too expensive to try. And so it's one of those things where there's no, you know, they have to have it expensive so they can make money, but if it's too expensive, people aren't going to buy it. So they have to find the equilibrium point where people are going to say, okay, this is worth it to go buy and do it. But anybody who does get their hands on it will play it and look and said, if I had this kind of money to spend, I would spend it on this because this is absolutely incredible.
Right. Now, what about the augmented reality? You know, for those people that are listening that don't know what augmented reality is, you probably heard of Pokemon Go, which is like this big, huge thing, and that's kind of like augmented reality. It's gaming mixed with the real world. Like you may, there was an example I had saw, and this wasn't really a game. It was just something else where somebody was looking. You could look through this thing. They were filming it, and they were looking at a wall. And the wall was actually there, but then there was this hole in the wall that went into like this virtual kind of like bookstore, which really wasn't there. So it's a mixture of the two. So what kind of future is there for augmented reality gaming as opposed to being completely in a virtual world?
Well, I mean, Pokemon Go is a great example of how successful that is. That's still sitting at the top of the App Store, both on Android and iPhone, both in the US and in other countries as well. They just announced that they're adding 80 new Pokemon to it, so they're still developing content for it and doing more. The problem is nobody's really talked about what's next for augmented reality. Nobody's said, hey, we're developing the next thing for it. Even Pokemon Go, for people that are in the industry and paying a lot of attention to it, they might have known about it, but it really kind of caught the public by surprise up until a couple months beforehand.
Right.
And so
they're talking about wearable tech as a possible next step for VR and for augmented reality, where, you know, you'll wear a glove or a vest or something that will give you a sensation when you interact with the game. You know, like if you get hit, it's sort of like when you would play laser tag and your chest plate would vibrate or whatever to show you got hit, but it would be like that. And so, so that is one thing that I've heard of. I mean, have you seen anything like that? Is that something that's feasible at this moment, or is that just like a pornographer's dream right now?
I think right now it's more of a dream than a reality. I know there have to be people that are out there working on those things, but there's nothing right now that people are saying, hey, this is a thing that exists and we're getting ready to bring it out to the public. Right now, the few things that are there that are kind of like that are very gimmicky. And they're something you could pick up for $25, $30 on Amazon, and it's not worth your money. But I would assume some of these companies, I think right now VR is just the main focus. But I think from there we could see them going into stuff like that. And I know people have talked about it, but there's really not been much done on that front in terms of actually making it available.
Interesting, interesting. So let's move on to another question here that's sort of, you know, industry trends. We talked about how many women play games. You know, it's like 40% of all gamers. How do they appeal to women? You know, do they need to make girl games, or can they just make games that people like to play that are good games, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a shoot 'em up or whatever, women will play it. I guess I'm asking, can they appeal to women without pandering?
Well, we've seen that they have, to an extent, and obviously there are a lot of women out there who would appreciate if there was some more stuff that was geared towards them, which I can't fully grasp that as I'm not a woman, but from people I have talked to, a lot of the perspective is, yeah, it'd be nice if we had a game that maybe focused around what happens in a female, you know, there's every game right now, for the most part, there's a male main character, it runs through a lot of things that typically people would associate with men. But they just had last year, Dishonored 2 was a big game that came out, and it gave you the option to play as a male character or the female character. and the female character was no less badass than the male character. And so it was one of those things where people were saying, yeah, this is definitely something I want to play. Lots of women were playing it. In the new Battlefield game, there's a whole chapter where you play as a woman who's fighting alongside Lawrence of Arabia. So they're doing things, ideally in a perfect world, they would make things to include women in video games that is not pandering to women or pandering to men by slapping barely any clothing on them, which is, I think, what most of the complaints are, is over-sexualization. There are ways to, and there are female characters that exist out there that are done in such a way where they're made well, and they're made in a way that both men and women can appreciate them. Because obviously, if men are 60% of the market, that's what developers are. They're always going to focus on the higher demographic. But if you're making something that both of these groups are going to like equally, which there are examples of things that they've done, then I think they're going to continue to do that. We've kind of seen that again with Dishonored just recently coming out a couple months ago as a huge example where they said, here's an option to play as a male or a female. And there are differences in what they can both do. The male obviously has more physical abilities. Mm-hmm. She can play the game more stealthily. And there are ways, if you complete the game without getting a single kill, it's a huge achievement. So many people have tried for.
Yeah.
It's way easier to do it with her because she's much better at those things. And a lot of women, from what I had seen, liked having that option.
It's about options for the gamer.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think at least it would be nice. I don't know if people are going to do this, but it would be nice to see them go in a direction where people were given options to play as, and a lot of games do this already, but either play as a male character or a female character. There's a new game coming out later this year, Prey, which allows you to do that. There are plenty of games that give you that option, but it would be nice if more did, because if I'm a guy and I'm sitting there and the only playable character is a woman, I wouldn't get angry. I wouldn't never play the game. But a part of me would say, well, it'd be nice if I could play as a guy, because for the most part, when we play video games, even though nobody wants to admit this, we often think of the character on the screen as an extension of ourselves. We like to think, I'm like this. I could totally jump from building to building and shoot people and be this awesome hero. And people want someone that's going to represent them and what they see themselves as. So I think people would be best to – that's the best way – I think to reach out to women more in a way that's inclusive, and it's not pandering. It's not, let's put out, you know, a Hello Kitty game and think that that's going to reach women, because it's not. And, you know, women gamers want to play good games too.
Fair enough. All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
Let's face it, folks. Cooking for a lot of people can be a drag, but it doesn't have to be. And Blue Apron can help you with that. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, even for people that can't cook. So if you're one of those people, you want good meals, you don't want something you're going to stick in a microwave, then Blue Apron is something that can help you out. Here's the best part. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. I've gotten these myself. Basically, it comes in a box. There's these big ice packets. All the food is fresh. They use great ingredients. And the food is really delicious. I've had a couple of the meals myself, and they're great, I'm telling you. And it's very easy to do. You don't have to know how to cook in order to do this. They give you, it comes with an instruction card that has photos and step-by-step instructions on what to do to make a great-tasting meal. Here are some of the upcoming meals that they're going to have. And this sounds really good. They have cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice, roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad. And you can get an udon noodle soup with miso and soft boiled eggs. There are so many different varieties of meals that you can get. It's very easy. If you don't like meat, you can cut out meat. If you don't like fish, you can cut out fish. It's up to you. You can even get vegetarian meals. So it's completely up to you. All right. So how do you take advantage of this? I'll tell you what. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/fifth. That's FIFTH, blueapron.com/fifth. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/fifth.
And we're back with Kyle Foley of Heat Street talking about video games. So, Kyle, I'd like to move the conversation away from sort of the video game industry and more into gaming culture and gamer culture. Now, what is your definition of sort of like gamer culture? And I guess the larger question is there one single gamer culture?
Is there? No, but there is an image of one, and it's this idea that it's the 20-something-year-old white guy living in his parents' basement still playing video games all the time. That's kind of the image of what gamer culture is, and I think a lot of that's just because that's the representation on social media sometimes, and if we use Twitter to try to define every type of demographic, then everything would look absolutely horrible, and we would only see the worst. That's why we should never do that. Gaming culture is really, and again, when I was reading up on kind of the statistics of who plays, it really kind of opened my eyes to that. But gaming culture is such a broad thing that every group tries to say, well, what I do is gaming culture. That's what gaming culture is to me. But there's really no set definition of what it is. It's way more broad than I think people realize, because there's people who only play shooter games, or there's people who only play strategy games, and they both think of themselves as completely different types of gamers. And if you ask them about the other kind, they might say, well, they're not real gamers. For example, someone who sits around playing Call of Duty all day, or someone who sits around playing Minecraft all day. Well, the Call of Duty player is going to call the Minecraft player, oh, they're not a real gamer. And the Minecraft player is probably going to say, well, you just don't appreciate real games or artful games. And so it's this kind of fight back and forth where everybody thinks what I do is superior, and in reality, we just all like different things.
Interesting. So speaking of, you know, just liking different things, some people really enjoy games that have a lot of, you know, violence and explosions and that sort of thing, which, having played them myself, it's wonderfully cathartic to be able to obliterate your enemies in a ball of hellfire. But violent video games are often blamed for many societal ills. You know, they're blamed for making people commit violence in real life. What's your take on that? Are violent video games a problem in and of themselves, or do they exacerbate underlying problems, or are they totally fine and people are overreacting?
Well, there's absolutely nothing that says violent video games cause violence in and of themselves. Now, there is obviously, to an extent, they can help spark that in some people, but that's always because of other things in that person's life. It's not just I pop in Grand Theft Auto one day and the next day I'm driving down the road running over people on the side of the road. It's things like that happen, and it's so rare that anything ever happens. It's like, hey, this person was also a gamer. Like, that just doesn't really exist. It's just often what people try to associate with. But I do think it's just, you know, it's just as likely that a violent movie could trigger that in those tendencies in someone as a violent video game. And I think part of that is, as video games become more and more realistic, it's kind of harder to make tell the difference between the two. I've had times where I'm playing a game and someone will look at it and say, wow, that looks like you're at, you know, if I'm playing the newest Madden game, I've played that before, and people have walked by and thought, who's playing? Who are you watching?
It's fantastic.
Oh, it is. It's ridiculous how realistic it is.
Yeah, it's amazing. And gamers, we love it. We love the games to look as real as possible, and it's incredible. But for some people, if they're not maybe mature enough to play this game, there's a reason rated M games require you to be 17 years or older to purchase. I should say you can't play them if you're younger. But there's a reason they do that. It's because if you're not young enough to differentiate between what's real life and what's not, and these things look so real, I guess it is theoretically possible to get caught up and see those things. But there's nothing that's happened to make that connection. So right now it's all just theoretical, and it's going to stay that. I mean, I don't want to say it's never going to happen, because obviously then if it does, I look like an idiot. But it hasn't happened yet, and it doesn't look like there are going to be those types of connections, because it's the same as saying we shouldn't get rid of violent movies. You know, and it all comes down to, for the most part, just parents. Be careful what your kids are playing, just like be careful what movies they're seeing. You're not going to take a 7-year-old to go see Deadpool. I gotta take him to go see the new John Wick movie. You're also probably shouldn't let him play Gears of War or Grand Theft Auto. It's just kind of understanding what that stuff is before kids get a hold of it. But once you're not a kid anymore, that stuff doesn't really matter.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, the Grand Theft Auto franchise is obviously not a game made for kids, for young kids. You know, there's lots of violence. There's lots of language. There's lots, you know, there's sexual situations. It's a game made for adults.
It is. It, true story, though, Grand Theft Auto does affect my driving. When I would play it as a, you know, 20-something-year-old man, I would get in the car and be like, oh, I am going to run up on the curb because I need to get around this light.
Well, you know, I'm like the comedian Bill Burr said that. Said, you know, if you're gonna be a bad driver, be an aggressive bad driver. It's like I don't care if you go around me on the grass. He goes, but get around me. He goes, rather than being the person that's gonna sit there and go real slow. So I'd be cool with that, Neil. I'd be all right with that. You driving like that. It doesn't bother me. Kyle lives in Florida. He knows how bad it is with slow drivers, so
I just had that earlier today. I was driving somewhere
Yeah.
A few things annoy me more than slow drivers.
No, and it's just as bad in Atlanta because the South, it's like, you know, and Neil's probably one of those people, you know. Oh, I'm out here driving all by myself. There's nobody
else
on the road.
Not at all. I am an aggressive, belligerent driver.
Oh, you're like a Northeastern guy then.
I am.
All right, that's good. Okay, so let's get back to the gaming discussion, and I kind of lost my place here, so forgive me. And Neil, you can kind of pick it up there. You
know, sure. Well, you know, one of the things that's going to happen as we get more, you know, into virtual reality, I think, is, you know, it's more immersive. And unfortunately, there is an aspect of the internet where people are insensitive jerks. And there was an example of a woman who reported that she was harassed in the course of a game. It was a virtual reality game where, you know, the only thing that you had, the only visualization of your character that you could see was like your hands. And I think apparently like the you could see other players, but it was very simplistic. But even so, when she spoke through the microphone, someone realized she was a woman, they immediately started to put their hands in inappropriate places on her character. So sexual harassment is already happening in virtual reality. So what can be done about that in a practical sense or in a larger cultural sense?
Well, sexual harassment to an extent has always kind of existed in video games. Whether it's vocal, because people say some very nasty things playing games, specifically about mothers. In games like Halo and Call of Duty, teabagging is a constant thing where you go over and you keep crouching on the player's face. Now, obviously, those things are a little bit different than virtual reality because this has come to an end. There have been specific things where people have said, you know, people have come up to me and groped me in this game. And it's important to obviously make the distinction that there is a difference between groping in a video game and groping in real life. Not that either should ever be acceptable.
Right. I mean, but both, in a sense, not to interrupt you, but both in a sense do make you feel somewhat, I would say, unwelcome or welcome in the wrong sense. You know?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the things developers have talked about to prevent that is to put bubbles around characters where you can't get close enough to a character, you know, when you're going through, you're not able to get close enough to do those kind of things to them, because it is hard in virtual reality, because how do you prevent things that make people feel unwelcome? But then you also have people who cry, oh, you're censoring my video games. It's no, we have an audience that doesn't like these things happening to them. And for some people, and I don't know specifically this has happened, but I could imagine if there was someone who had actually been sexually assaulted in real life, and then in a video game had something like that happen to them, that could be very, just mentally, that could be very damaging and not something they want to go through, to have to remember that and go back through that experience again, even if it's only virtual. And so for developers, it's hard to prevent that stuff because you have to prevent people being jerks, and that's hard to do. It's always been hard to do, and it's always going to be hard to do. And so they just have to take steps, try to make it as possible as they can without ruining the game, because you don't want characters not being able to interact with each other at all.
Right, that's the point, right?
The bubble is the thing that they've talked about, where it's there's a certain, you can't get too close to a character, so those things aren't going to be able to happen. But then from there, I mean, you have a player could just say things to someone that are harassing and that are horrible, and it's hard to stop that. And so part of it is just making it easy for the victims, the people who are receiving the harassment, to be able to just get away from the situation, whether it's block the specific player and no longer have to interact with them, or just leave the game lobby and go into a different one very easily, very quickly, and be able to report the player for what they did, and obviously having a system. It's much like Twitter with harassment. The way Twitter deals with it is horrible. Even though, and it's not an easy thing for them to do. It's the same in virtual reality gaming and just in gaming in general. It's something where the problem is seen. They're trying to figure out ways to do with it, but it's easier said than done.
All right, so we'll just have to cut out that long gap there. Okay, so let's kind of get into we got one more question and then we'll kind of wrap up. We're talking about Heat Street and everything like that, but Kyle, go ahead and as we kind of close out here, let everybody know where they can find more of your stuff. I mean, I know you have a YouTube channel and you got some other projects going on, a podcast and everything. So go ahead and let everybody know where they can find all that.
Okay, yeah, we do. I have a YouTube channel that I've been working on with two buddies of mine. It's called DPRG. Super easy to find on YouTube. It's also on Twitter. It exists. It's just official DPRG. And then we also do Twitch gaming every night. I stream every night, or I have one of my other friends who will stream.
What is Twitch gaming?
So Twitch is live streaming games, so I'll hop on and play something live and people will watch me and comment and I'll respond and interact with them. Something that originally I thought was just the dumbest idea, and then I've been doing it and been interacting with people. First of all, people are nuts and they'll sit and watch you play a video game for 4.5 hours.
Who's just going to wonder about that? Like, do people actually, I mean, like, I'm assuming this is probably something a lot of people like to do though.
It is. We did something last week where we played for 4.5 hours. And we had the same core group of people stay the entire time. They were communicating with us. One of the people was keeping track of how many times I died, which was way more than I'd ever like to admit. Just typing it in the chat, we were all laughing. And so we do a long kind of marathon one once a week. And then just every other night, we're doing just an hour or two of, here's the latest game that we're playing. Come check it out. You know, if it's a new game, people are wanting to see what the gameplay looks like before they buy it. The biggest thing, obviously, is you're bringing in people with your personality, because the gaming, they could just sit and watch cutscenes all day or buy the game themselves.
Right.
Really what they want is they want to be entertained. So they can watch a game that looks fun. They can make jokes. If you interact with your audience, which I try to do, it's so much easier too, because you're talking back and forth with these people.
Yeah.
Cracking jokes. It's great.
It's like Mystery Science Theater, right?
I think I'm too young to know what that is.
Damn it, Kyle.
Damn it. You don't know what Mystery Science Theater 3000 is?
That's okay.
Well, you should check it out, Kyle. It's an old show where these characters used to sit there and watch old crappy movies and just make fun of them the entire time.
Got it.
For our listeners, you should definitely check out Kyle's YouTube channel. And Kyle, the name of that again was the DPRG, right?
Yep. Super easy.
Okay. And where do they find you on, what is it, on Twitch? Is that what you said? Twitch?
Yep. It's just twitch.tv/DPRG.
There you go.
Yeah, we sound so old, Jay.
We do. It's funny.
Where did the kids
go? You're playing on Twitch? Where's that? What do you guys do?
If people want the easiest way, I post it all to my own personal Twitter every time I go and do something, whether it's a video or streaming. So that's super easy to find me. And that's at kfoley, FOLEYFL. I just, every day when I do stuff, I post it on there and try to get people to pay attention to me and laugh at me.
That's the name of the game, right? Yeah. That's the name of the game. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for joining us to talk about video games and give us a little bit of a perspective on that. I'm tempted to get back into it. I gotta say. But before we let you go, we have one more piece of business to conduct, and Jay Caruso, why don't you lay this head trip on Mr. Kyle Foley?
Yeah, so Kyle, Neil and I, you know, we have this thing where we have this one question that we ask people at the end of every show. And so, Yeah, we started off, I think, with it was with Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, and then we went into Star Wars versus Star Trek. We had another one, didn't we? I don't remember what it was. We had something else, I think. But interestingly enough, something came up in the last month or so. A particular actor was floated as being James Bond. And this immediately created a source of friction for Neil and I, because he was like, no.
It was.
And I was like, yes. Now we just kind of gave it away who's who, but it still doesn't matter. So the question is, can actor Tom Hardy play James Bond?
Oh, man. Why not?
Oh, no. Hold on, Jay. Let me just break it.
No.
You changed the question. The question is, Kyle, and answer this honestly, would Tom Hardy make a good James Bond?
I don't see a reason why he wouldn't.
There. So it still works.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like, yeah, that'd be super great. I'd be flipping out over that, but I wouldn't be upset. I think it could be good.
There.
I think he might be better than Daniel Craig.
So, wow.
Ooh.
Wow.
I didn't think he was that good. People might get angry at me for that. But
yeah, that's not a good opinion, but still, but that's fine.
Well, Jay, a lukewarm response is still a win.
Yeah, it was kind of like yours from last week when we were comparing the character to Risotto. But, you know, I guess a win is a win.
It's true. I'm still racing far ahead of you. I think it's like, what, 4-1 now, something like that?
No, so. It's not that far.
3-1?
This is not my first win. It's like 2-2 or something like that. You're not even ahead.
Fake news.
If it makes you guys feel any better, I've only been alive for, I think, one actor to play James Bond. So.
Yeah, that doesn't make us feel better.
Doesn't make me feel better at all.
No,
Kyle.
Not at all. All right, Kyle Foley, thank you again for being on. Appreciate it. You know, some of our audience is going to like this, and you know, make sure you tell all your friends to listen to it, and then they can sit there and make fun of the two old guys that you were talking to gaming about.
True. I might get all one of my friends to come listen.
Okay. Hey, that's fine with me. I'm good with that. You know, one listener doesn't matter. Two thousand, whatever it is. So.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, but we do appreciate you making the time for us, Kyle, and we again urge our listeners to go ahead and check out Kyle's efforts there at the official DPRG and also on Heat Street.
Yes. Do that. Thanks. All right, man. Thank you. Okay, everyone. That's going to do it for this episode of the Fifth Estate. We will be at CPAC. And we're going to do some interviews with some people there. We're going to go to CPAC, bring some back of that information, and let you listen to that, which should be kind of fun.
We should talk about this. Maybe we should announce it in a special episode.
Yeah, we'll do that in a special episode. So, but we appreciate you listening, and I'm Jay Caruso for Neil Doing. We will see you next time on The Fifth Estate.